The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
We continue to survey the emotional tones called rasa in ancient Indian cultural understanding. There are more than five of them, but this week we're touching upon the key ones for Dharma practice. And today's flavor is one that connects into all of them and is the direction that they're all heading. And that is the savor of peace, Santi in Pali. Some of you may be more familiar with the Sanskrit version, which is Shanti. But in early Buddhism, we would say Santi. In the suttas, the flavor of peace refers to the peace that comes with the fulfillment of the path. So it's the peace of liberation. And it also includes some associated qualities like tranquility, rest, purity, and happiness. So peace could be thought of as a spaciousness and presence that can underlie any of the other flavors, kind of like a baseline. And it gets stronger and stabler all along the path until it reaches full fruition when we awaken. So it's said to be like the string for a set of jewels, which are the other flavors that we're talking about. For many people, the idea of peace is not so glittery or emotionally exciting, the way the string is not as glittery as the jewels, but nonetheless, it's there and it gives support to all the others. So peace might be the deepest and most pervasive essence or emotional tone that there can be in these teachings. There's a verse in the Dhammapada that uses the word, well, this translation says flavor. It uses the word flavor twice. Tasting the flavor of solitude and peace, one becomes free of distress and evil, drinking the flavor of Dharma joy. And the word there is rasa in the Pali. So this mentions the flavor of solitude and peace, and it mentions the flavor of Dharma joy. So those all go together. This nectar of peace is woven so thoroughly throughout the suttas that we could never talk about all of them here that have this tone. So we'll just focus on two questions. What is needed in order to attain this peace? And once a person has become peaceful, how are they? You know, what is that like? So the prior conditions and the result. Of course, even those topics are too big, but they give us some kind of focus for today. So it's possible to approach the peace of liberation more from the heart side or more from the wisdom side. We see both of those in the suttas. So if we look at, here's one that sort of exemplifies the heart side, also a verse from the Dhammapada. A practitioner dwelling in loving kindness and pleased with the Buddha's teachings attains happiness, the stilling of formations, the state of peace. So we see some important qualities along this heart-based path to peace, right? So there's dwelling in loving kindness, dwelling in metta. And then it says the person is pleased with the teachings. So I associate that with having deep faith in the teachings and also spiritual joy. Sometimes we think we'll be happy once we get liberated. When I'm finally free, then I'll be happy. But the teachings are pretty clear that happiness is a prerequisite for awakening. We're going to be happy before we become free. So that's something that we can cultivate along the path. And then it also mentions the stilling of formations, so the deep tranquility that the mind can get into, such that it's no longer making stories. It's willing to let go. So this is a path to peace through the development of the heart, through love and happiness and faith. And then there are also suttas that talk about a path that sounds more like it comes from the wisdom side. They're not so different, but there are different sides. So there's a sutta that says specifically for one going along the path toward freedom, one should not neglect wisdom, should preserve truth, should cultivate relinquishment, and train for peace. So this is an orientation that's more focused on seeing things as they are, seeing truthfully, restraining the mind from its habits of grasping and aversion and reactivity, and being willing to let go very deeply, cultivating relinquishment. So this too is a path to peace, more from the wisdom and restraint side. So what about the result? You know, how is a person who has attained peace? These suttas that talk about the flavor, the essence of peace, what's that like? So the Buddha's teachings, as I read them, are clear that someone who has reached freedom and peace sees things from a very different perspective than our usual ways. So this is a quote that I think captures that. When the tides of conceiving no longer sweep over one, one is called a sage at peace. I am is a conceiving. I am this is a conceiving. I shall be and I shall not be are conceivings. By overcoming all conceivings, one is called a sage at peace. And the sage at peace is not born, does not age, does not die. They are not shaken and do not yearn. So this term conceivings refers to the way that we imagine things to be, or that we imagine ourselves to be, which is different from how they actually are. We're concocting stories. We're seeing ourselves as a being that's navigating a challenging external world. We're imagining the past and the future. And, you know, in a way that's conventional. It's not that we, you know, it's not that that doesn't have some value, but it does work against being deeply at peace. And I think we can see that in our practice. So, you know, worrying too much about who we are, what we're not, what we're going to be, whether this is going to work, can the future be like this? Was the past like that? So tiring. So this sage at peace who doesn't do that in the mind is quite radical, you know, and it's not something that we can really imagine or think about with our rational mind, or, you know, even through our emotions. We can't quite touch into that. But the teachings offer these sort of inspirational and visionary words so that something in us can feel and respond to that, something that's not part of our usual rational and emotional mind, something deeper. So there's something in our heart that can know what that is and move toward it. Kind of the way a seed knows which way to send the root and which way to send the stem, even when it's buried in the soil, right? It orients even though it's buried in the soil. So there's something in us that can do that too. Here's maybe a simpler version of the same idea of seeing things differently. It's a verse. Victory gives birth to hate. The defeated sleep in anguish. Giving up both victory and defeat, those who have attained peace sleep happily. So giving up both victory and defeat, those at peace can sleep happily. So there's a way of being that doesn't conceive of winning or losing. That's one more conceiving that has to be let go. Winning, losing, being better, being worse, or even being equal, all of those are conceivings. And, you know, like the sage at peace, we're learning to see in a different way. So our life is all about, did I win or did I lose? Did I get that or not? Did I come off okay or did I look kind of bad? Both of those lead to suffering. One of them because we have to defend it then and keep living up to it if we actually succeeded. And the other because we were defeated. Both of them harm us. So giving up both victory and defeat, those who have attained peace sleep happily. And that's maybe a little more pragmatic way of saying that. Can we find ways in which we're playing this game? And can we start to soften and ease that? You'll find it's much more peaceful. So although the full attainment of peace may seem far off, this flavor of peace can seep into our practice from the very beginning. We've all tasted peace, this savor of peace, in some form. So, you know, I'll just mention a few that are very, very practical and see if any of them resonate for you. So right when we start, we use basic mindfulness to be able to observe what we used to fall into. So for example, if we're having difficulty with anger, when we start mindfulness practice, we're taught to observe our anger. Can we see that we're angry at a given moment instead of just becoming that and acting on it? Right there, that's the beginning of a growing presence of peace, something where we're not getting caught. So that's something that we touch into right away, this idea of having an observer, being able to see what's happening in our mind. And then as we go along farther, we may be able to feel our body a little bit better. And then we can start feeling equanimity or peace as ease in the body. We start to have an embodied sense of peace. So if we are feeling tight, we realize, oh, you know, even if we don't connect in exactly with what view we're carrying or even what emotion we have, if we feel the tension in our belly or our throat, we know that there's some clinging there, and just feeling that and then being able to ease that, that too is an embodied sense of peace that starts to grow in us. We can then we can, if we follow that along and continue to try to find more and more ease in the heart, in the throat, in the shoulders, in the belly, we will find more and more of this savor of peace, and we'll start to be able to navigate our life better. So that's a lot of the path. We'll do that all along the path. And then at some point, we may have experiences that are quite deep feelings of peace. You know, they visit us at times. We'll have a moment out in nature, maybe, or on a retreat where we really, something drops away and we feel something very peaceful. It may not last, but we have that as a reference point. So our practice can take on a new dimension where we start to use our deepest experience of peace as kind of a reference point that we can touch into at times when we realize we're caught up. We can maybe even remember a little bit of that savor of that time that it was peaceful. And that can help us in moments that are challenging. And then at some point, maybe we gain the ability to have this emptiness or awareness that's inherently peaceful be in the background of our experience. Yeah, the mind still moves here and there and occasionally gets caught up, but we have almost a background or a baseline of awareness or peace or emptiness or equanimity. I'm going to use different words because it appears different ways. And that's something that we carry with us through the world. So all along the spectrum of the path, there are these ways that the flavor of peace is there in subtle or more manifest forms. It's where the path is going. So we've looked this week at some of the main emotional tones that run through the Buddhist teachings. We haven't looked at all of them, but a wide range that captures much of the essence of Dharma practice. If we could move through this set of emotions, carry these savors, we might find them to be resonant and helpful in our path. They're always supportive of the path. So we talked about love and compassion and care, sense of warmth and care that we can have in the heart. We talked about energy and heroism, having the strength to meet the challenges of the path. It's not an easy path, I know. And there are times when we can rise to that and have a heroic kind of stance in a good way. There's humor. Oh, we don't have that on this path. Oh, this mind that we're trying to tame, right? And then wonder and amazement. We have no idea what we're capable of, what's possible in the heart and the mind, what's wrapped up in there in the knot that we're carrying. When that starts to free, we can be amazed at what's possible. This human life, there's so much. And peace. It's all going toward peace. It all connects and is wrapped up in peace. And that's what the heart really wants, to rest upon itself in peace. So may you have all of these flavors and savors. May they make your life a wonderful, rich experience for you and for all that you touch. Thank you for this week.